are on air for Fanpour Racing's NASCAR Race Review and Hot Topic Sound Off. We are reviewing the races at Atlanta Motor Speedway and Five Flags Speedway in Pensacola, Florida. Joining me for tonight's show is our co-host, Sal Segala. Welcome to the show, Sal.
Well, good evening, Sharon. Thank you.
Okay. In the first half hour tonight, we are going to review, we'll do some updates about what's happening in the short track world in the first 15 minutes, and then we will review the ARCA East race that took place at Five Flags Speedway and talk about that race and give a few updates in the ARCA Menards series. At 9 o'clock, our guest comes on board, Tanner Reese, with Sunrise Ford Racing will be joining us. And he's racing the ARCA West Series this year. So he will be racing here in at Irwindale Speedway this coming weekend, I believe. And then also, after we talk with Tanner, we will talk about the Camping World Truck Series race that took place at Atlanta Motor Speedway. And at 9:30, our guest Jacob Gomes comes on board, and we will talk to him about his win at All-American Speedway in the Southwest Touring Series, the SRL. So he was supposed to be on last week, and something came up, and so he wasn't able to be here. So hopefully he'll have some good news for us when he comes on at 9:30. So.
Yes. Yeah. He's actually, we were going to have him. He just came off a win, and he was had a what he called a false alarm. He's his wife was getting ready to have a baby, so he tried to get hold of us from the hospital, but either way, we'll talk to him more about what is actually going on with him and his racing at the 6:30 or 8:30 hour, whatever. 6:30 my time hour.
Right, it's 9:30 Eastern.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
we'll probably do 10 minutes for each of the series, Sal, because we're going to start we're going to do the truck series. We'll start the Xfinity Series review and then finish it up after we talk with Jacob Gomes. And then the last 10 minutes of tonight, we'll do our Cup Series review. So it's going to be really quick reviews here tonight as we get into each of these series. So if we get a little bit ahead, we might start it in that first half hour of the Truck Series, but we'll see how that goes. Okay, let's go ahead and get started with some of the short track racing news that has taken place over the weekend. I know a lot of people were watching what was happening at
Five Flags Speedway.
Yeah, thank you. I couldn't think of the track all of a sudden. At Five Flags Speedway this weekend with the with the ARCA Menards Series East get racing their second race. But there was some other racing that was going on this weekend, too. William Byron has back-to-back victories at Hickory Motor Speedway. So it was a big weekend for William Byron again because he also won the Cup Series race. So he ran late models at the Hickory Homecoming and won that race and then jumped into his car on Sunday for the Cup Series and won that race. So that was the Easter Bunny 150 so at Hickory. So a pretty exciting weekend for William Byron.
Yeah, it was a really exciting weekend, you know, like you said, you know, to win the, you know, to be traveling, you know, the way he has. You know, grab those wins, especially the win in the Cup Series. That was huge, not only for him, but it was huge for Hendrick Motorsports. You know, they're starting to flex their power again, not only through Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott, but now it's filtered off into the other two drivers, which is Alex Bowman and William Byron.
Yes. So, yeah, it's really amazing. I know this year Hendrick Motorsports has kind of loosened up on their guidelines for racing outside of the NASCAR Cup Series, and they're really encouraging the drivers to get that out there to some of these short track teams and to race. And it's pretty exciting to see what's happening for some of those drivers as they get out to the track. Your local short track, and this one was Hickory. So a lot of the fans get to see him race locally.
Yes, and actually Chase Elliott also made a stop at Senoia, Georgia, which is the home of Bubba Pollard. His parents own that track. And Chase Elliott made a stop there on Saturday night and raced one of Bubba Pollard's cars over there. So that was neat for, you know, Chase Elliott to do that too. You know, and I'm glad that Rick's given him that opportunity because, you know what, it gives them the seat time that they need. Plus, you know, it's a lot of different, you know, a lot of different racing. And with these new cars, they don't know what they're up against. So any kind of seat time they get behind the wheel of any car, you know, is always beneficial, you know, for these drivers.
That is so true. So a lot of these drivers are looking to get some seat time at some of the local tracks. There was also an announcement this weekend that Berlin Raceway out in Michigan is going to be streaming. All of their races are going to be streamed on Flow Sport Racing for the season. So if you're a fan of Berlin Raceway, you can watch the Advanced Auto Parts Weekly Touring Series race out there all season long. So that's kind of cool. I thought that was a really cool announcement.
Yes, you know what? And actually, the Southwest, well, now it's called, they have what they call the National Tour. They're also making a stop in Berlin later on in the year. And actually, that's one of Derek Dolan's that's going to be one of the races Derek Thorne's going to hit. And that's supposed to be – it's loading right now. Berlin, it's going to be June the 8th and August the 10th. They're having two races this year there. They're all national. So I know Derek will be at the June the 8th one. I'm not too sure about the August 10th one, but he will be there for the one in June. So, you know, all you Berlin race fans want to see Derek Thorne. You know, there's your chance, you know, go out and watch, you know, one of our West Coast superstars, you know, as he's venturing out more East races this year than what he has in the past.
That's true. And, Sal, the next national event, you just mentioned it, Berlin Raceway on June the 8th and then August the 1st. But I wanted to see All-American Kern County. The next race for the Spears Southwest Touring Series is Saturday, April the 2nd, out at Kern County Raceway out in your neck of the woods. So,
yes, and actually that's the winter showdown that we've had. Bubba Pollard win the first two. Derek Thorne's won two. And actually, Ty Majeski also has a win there, and Kyle Busch has a win there at the All-Star Showdown. So between the seventh annual Winter Showdown. We've had Bubba Pollard win there. We've had Ty Majeski, Derek Thorne's won twice, and then Kyle Busch won four years back, I think, is when Kyle Busch got his win at the Winter Showdown.
Do they have the entry list yet for that race, Sal?
No, they haven't. You know, they have a preliminary, but it's going to include, you know, all of our regular drivers. You know, then I'm thinking now with I haven't talked to Brian, but I'm thinking now that a lot of the drivers know, a lot of Super Late Model drivers know that Derek Thorne isn't participating in the SRL Southwest Tour. We'll probably start picking up a lot more drivers, you know, that it kind of gives it, they feel, you know, they have more of a chance, you know, to win, you know, especially, you know, when you have a driver that's dominated this series, you know, for so long. I mean, last year he won 9 races. The year before that, he won all but one race, you know, and he just really, you know, became the king of the SRL series, you know, and just, you know, all the stats are all, you know, they're all, he's leading all the stats, but, you know, right. It's, you know, it's neat to see how much the series has, you know, has grown, you know, and the money, you know, that's involved with it, you know, and also, you know, the fact, you know, that, you know, they are going to, you know, back east to do some racing.
Yes, indeed. So, anyway, there's quite a bit going on there in the SRL series, and with that winter showdown, that is going to be a huge event. We remember we're the very first one, remember, Sal, when we were promoting that last year at Family Racing Radio.
Yes, I remember that.
So,
And actually, that was the one that Bubba Pollard got that, the very first, the inaugural winter showdown. And from there,
yes,
it's just grown, you know, into one of the marquee super late model events, you know, in the country.
I would say it's on the same level with the Snowball Derby at this point.
It's kind of close. You know, I would agree, but I would think that the All-Star Showdown that Urindale brought back, that the SRL and Urindale brought back, I think that would be more of a, because we get a higher car count and the money, there's a lot more money involved there. But yeah, like you said, for the West Coast, yeah, that, you know, that is one of our premier super late model races.
Okay. Now, South Boston Speedway's, their national weekly series had their opening day. Lane Ridge swept the Twin 65 features at Virginia's South Boston Speedway on opening day for the Advanced Auto Parts Series out there. So that was a big weekend for Lane Ridge.
Yeah, it is, you know, and you know, like you said, you know, now you mentioned South Boston, you know, and, you know, as the weeks go on, you know, we'll start looking, you know, at, you know, highlighting some of the other tracks. And maybe even one of these weeks, we'll see about getting Matt Weaver on, who covers all the short track all the short track racing for it's called America's, gosh, I think it's America's Racing or America something. But anyways, it's a spinoff from Racing America. There you go. It's a spinoff from Speed 51, and when he had his own website. So we'll get him on, and he's real. Matt is really knowledgeable when it comes to, you know, the short tracks and, you know, what's going on in the short track world. And, you know, it'll be really interesting, you know, to get him on, you know, and talk with him about it.
Okay. Another speedway that I see that was added to the Flow Racing broadcast schedule is Larry King Law's Langley Speedway in Hampton, Virginia, is also been added now to Flow Racing's broadcast schedule. That's kind of a fun one for me because I have relatives that are out in that area that have raced at Langley. So it's kind of cool to see that they're going to be on Flow Racing now as well. That's,
you know, it's funny,
Sharon. Huh?
Yeah, it's funny that, you know, you're mentioning all these speedways, and these are all, I mean, for all the old old school racers, these are the tracks that they, you know, a lot of them, you know, race at and, you know, kind of grew up at, you know, and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, it's going to be, yeah, you know, and, you know, Flow Racing, you know, taking, you know, starting to have a lot of racing. That's why that, when we had Tommy Mason on, you know, I'd ask Tommy, I go, so when do you think, you know, that Flow Racing is going to make, you know, make them an offer, you know, take over low budget TV, which would take over, you know, a lot of our short, which would take over our Urindale racing
mm-hmm.
over here. Then, you know, some of the stuff, you know, they do in Kern, of course, plus they do the,
right.
plus they have the Southwest Tour, you know, under their belt too. So, you know, it's good that Flow Racing is offering all this because it gives, you know, the short track fan, you know, a chance to see, you know, to see some good racing, since there's, they already have one for all the dirt tracks. So if you want to see dirt track racing,
mm-hmm.
there's another station
it's
type
big,
thing, you know, that shows all that.
It's a big bang for the buck, that's for sure. Okay, now I also want to now get into the Arkham Menard Series East because they had their second race this weekend at Five Flags Speedway. And Sammy Smith comes home with another victory. He won at the season opener at New Smyrna Speedway in February and won the second race here at Five Flags Speedway. So Sammy Smith is on the march toward perhaps another championship, Sal.
Oh, yes, he is. You know, plus he's racing in the he's been racing in the the Cappy World Truck Series too. You know, so
yes.
You know, he's got his hands full this season, you know, with as far as all his everything that he's racing, a really good racer, you know, really good kid, and I'm sure we're gonna see big things from him, you know, as the years progress.
That's true. Now his main competition, Taylor Gray, actually had a penalty for jumping the restart at the end of the race. And so that took him out of contention. But he was able to race back to, I think it was a third-place finish. The pole sitter, Leland Honeyman, came in second place. So it was a disappointment, I'm sure, for Taylor Gray. He's just 17 years old. But Sammy Smith, how exciting for him to have two wins on the schedule. And as you can imagine, he is at the top of the point standings as well.
Yes. Oh, I'm sure it was an exciting win, especially at a track, you know, with Five Flags. I think this is the second or third year because I think last year was the inaugural inaugural Arkham Menard Series race at Five Flags Speedway in Pensacola. So yeah, to get a win there, it's always big, no matter which series it is, you know, because of the, you know, history of the track, you know, everybody wants to, you know, they want to notch their, you know, grab a win out there.
Mm-hmm. That is so true. Good experience in preparation for that snowball derby too. Leland Honeyman is actually one of the rookies this season. He drives the number 02 LH Waterfront Construction, Musecker and Maynard. And he was 2.951 seconds behind Sammy Smith at the start finish line. Taylor Gray, as I mentioned, came in third. Daniel Escato, another rookie, came home with a fourth place finish. And in fifth place was Willie Mullins. That was a great finish for the number 11 of Willie Mullins. He's one of the standard bearers of the ARCA series, ARCA East.
Yes, he is. Yeah, they've been around the ARCA series for a long time, you know, and they're not one of the high dollar teams per se, you know, they're one of the low budget teams, you know, but they put their time in, you know, everything they do is in house, you know, I'm pretty sure it's a family run team. And, you know, it's neat to see, you know, Willie, you know, get that top five finish. It was a well earned and well deserved finish by the Mullins family.
That's true. It should be noted that Sammy Smith has just 10 career starts, and it's his fifth victory in just those 10 starts. He's batting 50-50 as far as wins, which is pretty amazing. Leland Honeyman became the 132nd driver in series history to earn a pole when he qualified for the General Tire Pole Award, and he did it with a track record, Sal, of 17.222 seconds or 104.517 miles per hour. He also led the first 27 laps and run among the top five all night long, crossing the line in second place at the finish, his career best result in just two career starts.
Wow. That's to break the track record. Well, you got to remember too, this is the Arkham Menard. So they had the record last year. So the record held up for a whole year, you know, but still,
yeah.
You know, to still go out there, you know, and break, you know, it's kind of funny, you know, when you think about it, you know, you think about, well, you know, well, yeah, he broke the record. You don't even think, well, how old was the record? Let me see. It was actually it was
one year old.
But yep. Still, a record's a record. Who knows? That record could hold for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years.
That's true. It should be also noted, Willie Mullins' top five finish was the first of his career on a short track within the Arkham Menards Series platform. Mullins brought out the first caution of the night, but he was able to regain his composure and scored his best career series finish and his first finish on the lead lap. It's his third straight top 10 series finish dating back to the last season at Inverness Speedway. So that's pretty cool for Willie Mullins.
Yeah, it is. It was really, like I said, it was really a good finish for him. And, you know, the team works hard, you know, and they, you know, they're out there.
Okay. Rookies, Daniel Escato, Brandon Barney, Ashton Higgins, and Jake Finch all recorded top 10 finishes in their series debut at Barclay Speedway, so that's impressive. Escato drove the Josh Williams owned number 60 Chevrolet to fourth place finish, guided in part by former ARCA Series driver turned driver coach. Remember Michael Lira? That's what he's doing now. Barney drove the Jeff McClurg. Yeah, Barney drove the Jeff McClurg's number 44 Ford into the top five before a late race spin relegated him to a sixth. And Higgins and Finch both ran in the top five earlier in the night before a late race troubles knocked them out of the hunt with Higgins in seventh and Finch in eighth. So, Michael Lira used to come on the show quite a bit, so it's really cool. He was an ARCA Menards Series driver for a while, and now he's doing driver coaching. So it reminds me of Austin Terrio, which, by the way, I read that Austin Terrio, remember him, he's running for state representative in Maine.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Boy. Yeah, it is. When you think about it, I mean, from race car driver to politician.
Yes, exactly. Benny Chastain crashed hard in the general title pole qualifying doing terminal damage to his number 10 Andy Hillenburg car. Chastain, who was uninjured in the crash, withdrew from the event. Wayne Peterson withdrew his number 0 car from the lineup and renumbered it as the number 10 car, with Nate Moeller taking the green to keep Hillenburg up in the ARCA East owner point standing. So a little juggling taking place there. Smith also leads Gray in the standings by 12 points. Honeyman is third, just 1 point behind Gray. Mullins and ninth-place finisher Donald Figge round out the top five. 15 drivers scored a top 10 finish in the first two races this year. Smith, Gray, Honeyman, Mullins, Figge are the only drivers to score a top 10 in both races so far. And 11 drivers set or matched their career best finish at Five Flag Speedway. The winner, Sammy Smith, second place, Leland Honeyman, fourth place, Daniel Escato, fifth place, Willie Mullins, sixth place, Brandon Barney, seventh place, Ashton Higgins, and eighth place, Jake Finch, 10th place, Christian Rose. We had him on the show last Thursday. 13th place, Tim Monroe, 14th place, Brad Smith, and 15th place, Nate Moeller. There were a season-high 9 cautions in the Pensacola 200, but the race's 39 caution laps were still 13 fewer behind the pace car than the season opener at New Smyrna. So those are some interesting stats from this ARCA Menards Series East race set by Flags.
Yeah, they are some crazy, interesting stats when you go back and look at them, and you know. Especially with the you know, with all the caution laps, you know, everything that went on behind.
That's true. And this race is going to be aired on USA. Give me a second and I'll pull that up here. Let me see if I can find it real quick. You can find that race on USA, usually about a week later. Hold on. Replay of Saturday's Pensacola 200 at Fox Lakes will be broadcast on USA Network on Monday, March the 28th at 1 p.m. Eastern. So if you're at work during that time, you probably want to set your DVR to catch that race. The next race for the ARCA East is going to be Friday, April the 29th at Dover Motor Speedway. The Dover 125 will be broadcast on Flow Racing starting at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Sal, did you want to cover the points report for the ARCA East?
Yeah, the ARCA East points are after the first two races, Sammy Smith is in first, Taylor Gray second, Leland Honeyman in third, Willie Mullins is in fourth, and Donald, how'd you pronounce his last name?
Dietke.
Okay. Dietke is in fifth. And then from there, then we go down to Stephanie Moore, sixth, Christian Rose in seventh, Steve Austin in eighth, Brad Smith in ninth, and Max Gutierrez is in 10th place. It looks like we have a total of, so far, nine drivers out of 22 drivers so far. That have raced the start off the season with the full racing.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's pretty tight when you look at it. They're just 1 point between second and third, 1 point between fourth and fifth, and then when you get to sixth and seventh, Stephanie Moyer and Christian Rose are actually tied at 30 points. And then 2 points behind them is Steve Austin. So it's pretty tight when you go down the line there with how close this is. But then it's only two races, too. So, we'll see how long Sammy Smith can hold that average finish of 1.0.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure pretty soon, you know, we'll start seeing a shakeup in the, we'll start seeing a shakeup in the points, depending, on how the, all the drivers below him, including himself, finish, they still have a pretty beefy schedule coming up. So,
yes.
They're hitting a lot of, hitting a lot of good tracks, they got Dover coming up. They got Nashville's Fairgrounds, which is where they hold the All-American 400. And then, of course, Iowa Speedway, one of your favorite tracks. Milwaukee Mile, that they finish out their season in Bristol again. So, actually, they hit Bristol. Yeah, Bristol once and Dover once. So, there'll be some good racing at these tracks coming up.
The next ARCA race for the ARCA Menards Series West is coming up on March the 26th at Irwindale Speedway, the Napa Auto Parts 150 presented by West Coast Stockcar Hall of Fame. And, that's going to be on Flow Sport Racing as well. And fans can also listen to the radio at arcaracing.com and Race Central there. But our next guest, I'm pretty sure, is going to be at that event. And I'm going to bring him into the queue right now. Let me find it here. Okay, so that we can talk to him. It's Tanner Rice. How are you, Tanner? And thank you for being here.
Hello, you got me?
I got you.
All right, cool. How about you?
Did I pronounce your name correctly? What is the correct pronunciation of your work, of your last name?
Tanner Wright. Right.
Tanner Wright. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. And you signed with Sunrise Ford Racing this year. And you also, Jacob Gomes is going to be on a little bit later from the SRL Southwest Tour. You've also raced in that series.
Yeah.
Correct?
Super. Yeah, correct. Super cool deal signing that ARCA contract. And, yeah, I ran a couple super late model SRL races last year and kind of been straying away from that just a little bit. But we still have the cars and the opportunities to race them sometimes. So, yeah.
Okay. So what attracted you to the ARCA Menards West Series?
It's just a lot of publicity, and it's a good learning car for the next series in the way of trucks and Xfinity and the Cup Series. It's just a good stepping stone, and we see a lot of drivers go through the ARCA Menards West and the ARCA Menards National Series, and the opportunity arose, and it's a really good car, really good team, so we figured we'd give it a shot and try our best because we think we have a really good running. We run most of the tracks that they run in their series. We do the Roseville and Kern and Irwindale and Vegas. So I run a lot of the same tracks and learn a lot of experiences and drivers and the cars. And it's just a whole learning experience that I think is helping us greatly.
Okay. Yeah, I think you're right on the mark there. Now, you're racing the West on a full-time basis this year. Do you have any aspirations to race in any of the ARCA Menards races or the ARCA East?
I would love to. Just kind of this the team that we have signed with right now, we just do West Coast races, but if the opportunity ever arose to do an East Coast race or the Tour races in the ARCA Menards series, I'd absolutely love the opportunity, yes. Just for this season, we're going to be doing the West, but in the future, I would love to do the National or East Series.
Well, you kind of had a little bit of a taste for it when you raced out at Phoenix last weekend. Tell me about that experience, because 39 cars on a one-mile track, that had to be an experience.
So that was a great, especially learning experience with one-mile track. So the biggest track I drove on was Kern County Speedway. So it's about double the size of the track. So it was a great learning experience getting used to the corner speeds and the way you drive the cars and let off the throttle into the corners and carry the speed. I had a great time, especially, and I think we did a really great job for first time with only an hour of practice, especially with the fact that there's two different classes of cars there. There's the ARCA Menards Series and ARCA Menards West. So we get different motor packages, and they are restricted at that track, but they're fuel injected compared to carbureted motors. So that's kind of like a disadvantage in the telemetry and the wind tunnel testing. But for West Coast team, my teammate obviously finishing fifth and getting a little rusted up, but running around 10th with a shot for 9th and 8th. We did very well, in our opinion, for what we had, the class of cars we were running with. So it was a great experience all around.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And then are you going to be racing at Irwindale?
Yes, this weekend, Saturday.
Okay. And you've raced at Irwindale before, so that's going to be more old hat for you, is it?
Yeah, I ran the weekly series there, and actually I won the California Rookie of the Year there and ran one of the races and got some podiums and really liked the track, spent some time there. I've also done some ARCA testing there, and we've had great speed and great cornering abilities, all the tests we've done there, and I know the track pretty well, so I'm pretty excited about that. I think we should have a good run there.
Well, what are your goals going into Atlanta next weekend? Oh, Atlanta. I meant Irwindale.
Irwindale, yeah. Well, I believe that we have a race-winning car and a race-winning driver and the skills and the talent and the knowledge to have a really good weekend. You know, obviously points is what comes first, but I believe we could have a really good chase for the victory there.
All right. That sounds like a good goal. Okay, Sal Segal is with us tonight, and I know he's biting at the bit with some questions for you as well, Tanner, so we're going to pass the microphone over.
Sounds
hey,
good.
What's
Thank
up,
you.
Tanner? How you doing?
How's it going, Sal? Doing good.
Good. Hey, it's finally got a chance to get you on the show. I've been trying to get you off this last year. You know what? You know, we've had some, you know, with all the different changes with COVID and then some of the schedule changes that me and Sharon went through. But I'm glad we were finally able to get you on, you know, talk a little bit more about, you know, how you got started, you know, why the number 43. And, of course, one of the biggest questions is how did you get your nickname?
Oh, okay. So, well, thank you for inviting me on the show. I love to be here. I love the radio podcasts and radio shows and all that stuff. It's one of my favorite things to do, actually. Well, thanks for the invitation. So I started racing in quarter midgets when I was 4.5, 5, doing the rookie series in Orange Show Speedway, the little track next to the late model track they have there. Ran there for a long time, and it was kind of just a hobby when it first was an idea. I just told my dad I wanted to race, and he's like, okay, we'll do this on the weekends, and the other weekends we'll go out in the boat and go to the sand dunes, and we're like, all right, we pick this car up. Well, let's get a second car, and let's get more speed, and oh, we want to beat them. Let's learn this. So we picked it up. Oh, my brother's old enough. Let's get him racing. Oh, there's a traveling. Oh, they race other tracks, so we started racing other tracks. And actually, one of the guys who got us traveling in more competitive tracks, and because we ran them all the way from California to New York, the quarter midget series, and we ran the national USAC series and won the championship in 2014, national championship in junior animal, was Rick Ankrum convinced us to go run a race, and I think it was North Carolina or New York. It was New York. And, you know, Rick Ankrum, father of Tyler Ankrum in the truck series right now, we were all good friends at Orange Show, and he kind of got us into traveling and doing more of the racing. So we started getting more into it, and more competitive, more cars, bigger trailer, bigger rig, more cars, and brother getting competitive. And so we did that till 2015, 2016, and along the way, there was an announcer, I forget his last name, but we called him Butch. He had gave nicknames to every kid that raced in the series. Every kid had a nickname, and he was my favorite announcer. And we all got nicknames, and he had come up with Rolling the Dice, Ken Rife, and I was like, that's got to catch a ring to it. I'll keep it. So that's kind of stuck with the racing and my name. And it got a lot, I use it on basically everything, so I love it. And then I picked the number 43 because, you know, growing up with YouTube and phones and stuff, there was the videos of Ken Block and stuff. So I was like, oh, man, this guy's crazy. I like it. 43, that's a good number. I'll pick that. And then it was, you know, more into NASCAR, more knowledge, and, you know, Richard Petty and the blue and the orange cars. And, like, man, I like those cars. Those cars look really cool. I like this number. So I was just like, hey, I want to be the 43. And it kind of was like, all right, temporary thing. And then it kind of stuck. So,
yeah that's and pretty then, awesome.
Yeah, and my dad did something that he can't believe he did today. Was when I was 10 years old, we started running the Junior Late Model Series out of Madera Speedway, straight out of quarter midgets. I never did anything. I went from a quarter midget race in Indianapolis to running a Junior Late Model at Madera. So that was a crazy experience. I think that's probably the most drastic change you can make.
You know, and, you know, and actually watching your, you know, your progress, you know, all the way from junior late models, you know, all the way up, you know, to the, you know, into the pro late, you know, and then now, you know, the ARCA West. What are some of your expectations, you know, with this season, you know, especially this being your rookie season? I know every rookie has, you know, different expectations, you know, is what they want to get out of this season, especially, you know, being away from, you know, from the pro late.
Yeah. Well, my aspirations really this year were get as many points as we can. And, you know, my teammates got a really good start on the entire field for the West Series. And I'm just trying to follow along his footsteps, do the best I can in every race. And maybe go for Rookie of the Year. And if the cards play in our favor, maybe the championship. But, you know, shoot for the stars. Do the best we can. Pick up a couple wins. Definitely definitely want to go for the Rookie of the Year this year, and maybe even the championship. So, you know, just really just do the best we can and prove that I can do exceptionally well in a new car.
So what was it like to finally, you know, get away from the half mile track, you know, and you know, race out there at Phoenix, you know, and, you know, everybody, I know a lot of the drivers, you know, that's, of course, you know, that's one of the things they want to do, you know, is get it, you know, to the bigger tracks, you know, which will probably would actually, that's the biggest track you'll race at this year besides, you know, the road course at Sonoma, you know, which is coming up, you know, later on in the year.
Yeah. It was definitely a crazy experience. The speeds we were getting were drastically higher, and it's not really the speeds, it's how fast the corners come up and how much the car, you have to believe in the car to turn and to be able to lay the throttle down. It's a new experience because just having trust in the car and the fact that everything's been built correctly and trust in the team that they've built a fast, proper race car to go on the track and to, you know, just to learn and figure out the line, how to send it in further down the corner and get on the gas when you feel like you shouldn't be getting on the gas. It was definitely a cool experience because my spotter, David Cooley, was like, hey, you got to pick up the throttle a little earlier. So I would go in the corner and I'd pick up the throttle about a car length earlier. And he's like, hey, you still got to pick up the throttle earlier. And I said, I am scared to death. I am picking up the throttle earlier than I ever think I could. And he's like, yeah, you need to go about 20 car lengths more. So that was definitely an experience. But we figured out picking it up. And getting some good lap times, and qualifying lap got a little messed up, but besides that, had a really fast car in the race and really competitive and had a really good shot for a good top eight.
So how did you get David Cooley to be your spotter? For the listeners that don't know, David Cooley is Derek Thorne's spotter. He's been a spotter for a long time. He spotted for Jeremy Doss during his championship season in the SRL also, but you know, because I you know, from the knowledge that I have, you know, Bob, you know, Brucati, I know he kind of lets you guys, you know, as far as your team, you know, kind of build your own team with the exception of the crew chiefs. You know, he always wants Jeff Schrader and Bill Sedwick, you know, to run the two teams.
I think it was just kind of a group, a coincidental thing. It's just they knew Bob and Jeff and Bill knew David, and it was just a kind of luck of the draw thing. And it was just, hey, we have this spotter. Would you like to try him out in Phoenix? And, you know, we gave him a run, and he's a really good spotter. I love having him as a spotter. He did a really great job and kept me in from, and he's really fast on the draw whenever there's a car spinning out or a yellow or what to do, especially with a rookie, as I've never done anything like that. And I'll tell you this, the NASCAR series is a lot more wild. The yellow flags are faster. Everything moves a lot faster than a SRL series.
So my last question is, your boy Ken Roczen, he retired.
Oh, boy. well, I think that's just a coincidental thing. It's just my brother's really into dirt bikes, and I don't really watch Supercross all that much. I just like to take the person he doesn't like. So, you know, and it's just it is cool to watch Supercross, but I'm not that up to date with it. I know we talked about it before, but I don't really watch it that much. But I did hear that he did retire.
Anyways, Tanner, I just want to say, you know, good luck. I'll see you at Irwindale this weekend. And with that, you know, I'm going to turn it over to Sharon. I know Sharon, she has to close the interview out.
All right, Julio, thank you. It was fun having you on the show. I loved it, all the questions and all the experiences. I hope to see you at Irwindale.
Okay. Well, Tanner, we were really happy to have you here. I feel like we just touched the surface here in getting to know you. But we hope you'll come back on the show with us somewhere down the road this season. And keep us up to date with what's going on for you. Before you go, are there any team members, other team members? I know we talked about David Crowley. Are there any other team members you want to shout out to? And then also your social media handles so fans know how they can follow you. We kind of already talked about it.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you for having me on the show. I really loved it. And really just the entire Sunrise Ford Racing team, they do such a good job. But Jeff Schrader, Bill Sedgwick, Bob Brancati, David Cooley, they all help so much. And all the crew guys that work on the cars day to day, working on the transmissions, the rear ends, and the gears, and even Jake Drew, because he lives over there, so he works on the cars all on the weekdays. So all the Sunrise guys are doing such a good job helping us get out there, and I'm having a blast doing it. And they're really good. They do really good jobs. And I'm on Facebook under Tanner Reif, T-A-N-N-E-R, capital R-E-I-F, and Instagram. Same thing, Tanner underscore Rice. And, yeah, great being on the show. Thank you so much.
Okay. And we'll stay in touch with you. And, like I said, hopefully have you back on. And good luck to
For
you
sure.
out at Irwindale this weekend.
For sure. Thank you. Yeah, I'd love to be back on the show. It was a great experience. And thank you. hopefully I can see Sal out there.
Sal.
Be cool. Get some good pictures.
Oh yeah, I'll see you out there on Saturday.
For sure. Thank you, Sal. Thank you guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks. Thanks again.
Thanks, Tanner.
Thank you.
All right, that is Tanner Reif with Sunrise Ford Racing, racing the full season in the Arca Menards Series West. And that was a lot of fun getting to know him a little bit, Sal.
Yeah, it is. You know, Sharon, there's a lot more to this family that we didn't even get to touch on. He has a brother that they race. They both race the Pro Late together. And, oh, my gosh,
oh,
Sharon, you got to see all the fun I have with them.
You mentioned Tyler.
With the whole family, yeah. And actually, we've had Matt Jackson on the show before. Remember, he had the Southwest Super Late Series probably three, four,
yeah.
5 years ago. And we have – and anyways, Matt works with the team. So his dad – their dad, Travis, he's a really neat guy. Then their mom, Tori, she does the tires for the team.
Oh,
not for the Sunrise, but for their Prolate team. So I go down there, and, oh, man, this past, ever since Tanner made the announcement that he was going to the West Series, I went down there. It was during the All-Star Showdown, and I kind of teased him a little bit. But we have a lot of fun. A great, great family to be around. A lot of fun. Oh, my gosh. They're just awesome team. I mean, and these boys can race. I mean, they're not just somebody out there. They can race. Anyways, let's go on. Let's move on.
Yeah, we've only got 10 minutes for each of these series.
I know.
So we really got to get going. Okay, on the Camping World Truck Series, Corey Heim came home as the winner of that race. And that was pretty exciting. I think, his teammate Chandler Smith wanted to contest with him for that finish, but John Hunter Nemechek was in between him, and John Hunter Nemechek was the guy who kind of pushed him to that win. He's only 19 years old, right, driving the number 51 for JBL Toyota owner Kyle Busch and crew chief Marty Lindley. It was his first victory in five Truck Series starts, his first victory and first top 10 this year, and his first victory at Atlanta. Ben Rhodes posted his sixth top 10 finish in seven races at Atlanta and his second of the year. Ty Majeski in third posted his first top 10 finish in two races at Atlanta. Heim is a rookie, so he was the highest finishing rookie in the series. The rest of that top 10, let me go back here, includes Chandler Smith, Zane Smith finished in fifth. Then you had Stuart Friesen, Ryan Preece, Tanner Gray, Derek Klaus, and Austin Wayne Self rounding out the top 10 there. Quick thought.
Yeah, it was a great finish. I mean, John Hunter Nemechek had to make a decision. Is it Corey or is it Chandler? He took Corey. You know what? And when you go back to the race, I'm sorry, Chandler. You know what? You know, you got your win. You know what?
Yeah.
Spread the wealth a little bit. You know what? John Hunter Nemechek is technically a veteran. He knew what he was doing. He knew who to push. He knew who was faster. And I don't think Chandler had anything for Corey anyways. Corey was the class of the field. And John Hunter Nemechek knew it, and he went with the fastest driver. Sorry, you know what? There's always next week. Next race. That's right.
Okay, let's go ahead and cover the points report.
Okay, and then the points, wow. What a season we're having here with this truck series. So far we still got Chandler Smith in first. Tanner Gray still holding on to that second spot. And then we got Ty Majeski in third, Stuart Friesen in fourth, and Ben Rhodes rounds out the top five. And then from there we go to Chris Anakis, sixth, Austin Wayne Self in seventh, John Hunter Nemechek in eighth, Zane Smith in ninth, and Matt Crafton round off the top 10. And I think, is that what they take into the, they take the top 10 into the playoff,
truck,
right?
Series, yeah.
For the 12th.
Yep,
yep. Yeah, they only go 10, that's right. Yeah. And then the Xfinity goes 12. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so not much of a shake up in the points yet, but as the races come on, you know, we're going to start seeing a, you know, big, you know, a lot of changes and, you know, a lot of different, you know, finishes. And it's going to be an exciting, exciting season. We've seen it.
Yep. Three races and three different winners.
My gosh, I couldn't believe all the passing that was going on. 2-3 wide racing. It was awesome. It was a really great race.
It's amazing. It's amazing what they did out there at Atlanta Motor Speedway on a 1.5-mile track to make it race like a speedway is just amazing, or like a super speedway is amazing. It should be, let's see, I want to make sure we also noted some other things here. I'm kind of flipping between several pages here, so give me a second. 52 of Stuart Friesen won the first stage. It was number 4 of, I think that's John Hunter Nemechek, won the second stage. No, Ty Majeski. No, that's not right. Who's the number 4? I thought that was...
That's Nemechek.
Yeah, John Hunter Nemechek. I thought it was.
Yeah, it's the number 4.
Okay,
yeah.
He won the second stage. So there were 77 caution flags for 40 laps. And 18 lead changes among 10 drivers. And I went back and I looked. The races there last year, and you know the margin of victory was so much bigger than what it was this weekend for all three series. So the margin of victory here in the truck series was less than a second point. 0.173 seconds margin of victory. We haven't really seen that at Atlanta. Usually somebody kind of rides away with it, and that didn't happen this weekend. There was a lot of jockeying for that lead.
Yes, there it was, you know, and it was neat to see Corey Heim win, you know, get the win. You know, he was fast. You know, he bit his time. You know what? He stayed behind Chandler Smith, you know, until it was time to make that move, you know, and then, like I said, you know what, you know, that's where, you know, anything can happen. And, it's kind of ironic because they're teammates, you know, with Kyle Busch, but when I seen him at the Snowball Derby, they were both racing Corey Heim. Well, of course, Chandler Smith won it, but they both raced for different teams at the Snowball Derby.
That's true. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the Xfinity Series. We'll get it started, and then we'll move on to finish it after we finish our next interview. Ty Gibbs is the race winner again, 19 years of age. He drove the number 54 Sports Clip Haircuts Toyota for Coy Gibbs, or Joe Gibbs Racing, with crew chief Chris Dale. He won, it was his sixth victory in 23 Xfinity Series starts. his second victory and third top 10 finish this year, and the first victory and first top 10 finish in one race at Atlanta Motor Speedway. This kid is just amazing. Austin Hill was second. He posted his first top 10 finish in one race at Atlanta, and it is his second top 10 finish of this year. Allmendinger in third posted his third top 10 finish in four races at Atlanta. Austin Hill in second was the highest finishing rookie of the race. And then I want to also give you the rest of the lineup here. Riley Herbst had a fourth place finish, though, followed by Landon Castle, Mason Macy, Brandon Jones in seventh, Kyle Weatherman, Sheldon Creed, and Ryan Sieg rounding out the top 10. Some different names up in that top 10.
Yeah, you know, actually Ryan Sieg was fighting for that win at the end, and he kind of got pushed out of the way by Ty Gibbs. Ty lined up behind him and kind of pushed him out of the way a little bit, and then Ty made that bonsai move down to the bottom and, you know, took the lead.
He threaded the needle. That was an amazing move.
That was an amazing move, you know, but then he kind of had a laugh at the end when they said it's a good thing he was wearing his helmet when he got out of the car, because after the celebration, he slipped and fell on his back on the front stretch, you know. You kind of feel bad for Austin Hill. Is really having a good season, really great season.
He is
this year in the Xfinity series. He was good in the trucks. He's a lot better, I think, in the Xfinity cars.
Yes. Okay, the number 8 of Josh Berry won the first stage. The number 16 of, I've got to relearn all these numbers now. Who's in the 16 this year? All of a sudden, I don't see who's in that 16 car. But they've got the 16 listed as the
that's
stage
Allmendinger.
2 winner. Allmendinger. Okay, that's right. A.J. Allmendinger. There were 10 caution flags for 56 laps. That's amazing. And 11 lead changes among the 10 drivers in the Xfinity Series. Again, pretty amazing. Austin Hill was the rookie of that race. When we come back, we will talk about the points, Sal. But let's go ahead and do the lead up for our next guest here.
Yeah, our next guest kind of dogged us last week. Didn't call in, didn't text, didn't say nothing until the show was completely over. Then he calls me and says, "Hey, Sal, what's up?" I said, "Dude, I'm sitting here eating dinner, man." I said, "The show's over with." No, anyways, me and Jacob, we go a long ways back, but he's a really, really nice guy and a really good driver. You know, he's been around the SRL for he's one of the drivers that has already raced over 100 races in the SRL series, and he has a championship too to go with it. So it's going to be neat to talk with him about how his racing has gone, and then some exciting news that he's had in the past week, and I'll tell you he's just a really, really down, one of those down to earth drivers, that you can go out there and after the race you can go crack a beer with them, and talk with them. He's good with the fans, he's good with his team, newlywed, so he's really good with his wife. And actually, remember Bob Newberry we had on a long time ago?
Yep.
Sharon, he owned NTS.
And his son?
Truck. Yeah, his son, Brent Brennan. Well, Jacob married Bob Newberry's youngest daughter.
Oh,
They're all from the same area. Yeah, they're all from the same area. So, yeah. Jacob ended up marrying Devin Newberry, and they've been married for a couple years now. And he's got some exciting news. Once he comes on, he said he would call in at 6:29. The time is now 6:30.
Well, he's here.
Oh, he's here. He should have said something. Oh man, here we're talking about him.
Oh, I thought you heard him.
Hey.
Okay.
No, I didn't hear him say anything. He's kind of ninja, I guess. Anyways, our next guest, we want to welcome him. He's a Spears SRL Tour past champion. He's also part of the Century Club. And, with that, we want to welcome Jacob to the show. Welcome to the show, Jacob.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Sorry I ghosted you guys.
That's all right. You know what? You made me laugh on that. But, before we start, I just want to say congratulations on your new addition to your family. I know you and Devin just became parents, and it's really neat because it's been a long time coming. A whole 9 months you guys waited for this moment, and for it to finally get here. And it says, see the picture of your baby. Oh my God, she is just a doll.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's been a very eventful week.
So, anyway, Jacob, let's talk a little bit of racing now. You've been around the SRL. There's only four drivers that have reached the century mark, in that series, and I know with, Larry and Brian, it was a big thing, when we finally, got the first century driver. But throughout all those years racing the SRL, what's it like, to get out there and know, you had that many races under your belt, and just the things that you've seen in the past, and some of your highlights and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, I've been racing it since I was 16. I'm about to turn 29, so I've been doing it for a long time with them, and just it's been fun just watching the way the series has transitioned, and Brian and Larry and Marion and everybody involved in the SRL has done a great job to make, obviously it's the greatest series in the country, if not, everywhere, but for sure on the West Coast, they've got it figured out, and just it's been fun. We've gone all over the place. I've been to a lot of tracks with them, and it's been a lot of fun, racing with them, and we've had a lot of races, and every race you race, your heart still races the same amount every time you do it. You never really get used to it, because right when you think you got it figured out, somebody else, like Derek Thorne or somebody comes around and just proves you, how wrong you are.
Yeah, I know. That's always been one of the topics, of the SRL. But anyways, going back to when you first started racing, what was the first car that you ever Trevor got behind the wheel of, and when did you fall in love with the sport?
Well, I was 3 years, I think I was 4 years old, and my dad bought a QRC box stock cart, which is like a little dirt outlaw cart, and I used to drive it up and down the street all the time, so I got used to it, and my dad farms and our family farms, so we used to have property, and I'd go out and, drive it around and just get used to it, and when I turned 5, I was finally old enough to go to a local dirt track and make some laps, and we raced out for a while till my dad, wanted to go try something different. We won some races, and he really loved asphalt, watching Dale Earnhardt. Jeff Gordon was my favorite driver growing up, and just wanted to get involved in asphalt racing. My dad had a little late model deal. He stepped away from that and started racing with me, and my younger brother used to race too. So we started off in box stocks, went to mini cups, ended up in baby grands, which is like a legend, but it's got a body on it, like a late model. We ran those till I was about 14, and then when I turned 15, I jumped into late models, practiced for a while, and actually made my first race at 16. I had to wait for my birthday, and been racing late models, and then I transitioned over to the SRL, I think right before I turned 17, I jumped in a tour car. But yeah, I've been racing all over the place.
Wow, that's pretty neat, because back when you were 17 to get into a super late, it was unheard of, because of the, a lot of the tracks, they didn't, they had their age restrictions. Plus, it wasn't so much a late model, but now you're getting a car, it's a lot faster than the late model.
Yeah, growing up, that's one thing that kind of, stuck growing up racing. Like, I remember at the racetrack, you had to be 16 to get in the pits to go watch. So I used to sit in the stands with my mom growing up. Even though I was racing at a racetrack, if that series wasn't at the track, you had to stay at home. You had to go in the stands. But it's kind of weird. When I turned 16, they dropped the rule. And then I can't remember how it worked. But as it would go on, they keep changing. Now, obviously, you can be 14 years old driving a tour car. So kind of sucks. I came into the racing world a little at the wrong time, if you want to say, just behind the ball. And, everything changed. As I came in, all the things I had to wait for transitioned, into, what it is now. And if I would have been born 2 years later, I would have been right in the heat of, other young kids that are coming up, they're 13, 14 driving late models. And I never had that opportunity. It was never heard of. So kind of got gypped a little bit on it, but I've been trying to make the most of it, trying to run the best we can for what we're doing now. And the past is the past, and just, looking in the future and trying to, chase Derek Thorne and chase those guys up there that, beat us every weekend and try and learn from them and become a little better.
So what are some of your highlights from the SRL? I know you have a championship, you've got multiple wins, but there's always, those one or two, one or two things, that happen, throughout, the course of those 100-plus races, that just stand out.
Well, there's been a lot of highlights. I mean, I had my first win coming to me. I was just turned, I was 16. I think it was my third race. We went to a place called Orange Show there in Southern California. First time there, and I was leading it with three laps to go, and my axle popped out. And I had been, the youngest winner in SRL history. So I kind of got – that was a bummer in my highlight.
Oh.
My first win was at Vegas about four races later, and then we went on to win – three more races that year and had a run for the championship and went to the last race and ended up getting in a wreck and losing that opportunity. But there's been a lot. I mean, we used to go to Utah. It was really dominant when we went to Utah. Colorado used to go, to the one-mile track. I wish we'd go back. That was a lot of fun, especially now the way the cars are transitioning to a lot more speed and everything. That'd be a great track to go back to. But a lot of highlights, winning, and hopefully more highlights to come. I've never won on a half-mile track, and we're going to Kern, in a couple weeks here, and hopefully that transitions coming off our last win and everything we've been having going on lately. Hopefully that gets us a better run so I can finally get that half-mile win. I've chased them so many times and fell one lap short, got passed, and just working on everything slowly. It's been a lot of fun racing the tour, and it's been great. Going to the Snowball Derby was always also a really good highlight. Never have made that race, so we're going to go try and go back again this year and make that race to be another check on the bucket list.
Yeah, that's great. Now technology, everybody talks about the technology, that it's gone on, throughout the years, with the Supermates, all the different changes, of course, with the changes came the different rule packages, going from track to, well, actually the SRL kept the same. They kept the same rule package, but, you always hear, about, a track, you can't race here because of their rules or their rules. But, I mean, going back to when you first started racing Super Late to what you see now, how much has the technology just really upped the ante as far as, trying to get that win, speed, handling and all that?
Yeah, and that's one thing that's been crazy. So when we first got into it, it was kind of getting off the conventional deal, like conventional big springs, big bars, no travel. And then when we got into it, it was started getting into this limited traveling deal. So they're coil binding, doing different stuff. And it just, became more of a, you can't really miss the curve. It's more accurate, more speed. So we got a handle of that. We ran a lot of races, and then going transitioning out of that, a couple years into that, they came into the bump stop deal. So it's always, right when you think you got it figured out, that somebody else gets it better or the learning curve changes. So now I feel like what's been going on lately now, with the motor deal they got going on, different motor packages, everybody's kind of, in the last 3 years with the bump stops, everybody's kind of like got a good grasp, I feel, on everything now. But it's a learning curve. Every week, something different. Every track's different. Different tire combos are changing a lot lately. So it's hard to catch on the learning curve. It definitely is. And it's become almost a full-time job. And it's really changed a lot for people like my family that, I have a regular job with my family. And everybody on my team's a volunteer. We don't have anybody paid. We just go and do it because everybody involved with me just loves it. And we do it because, it's been our life. And it's hard to go out there and beat these guys that, are racing on a lot of money, and we do, I mean, we try to do everything we got right, but you got guys out there that just got, you know, this checkbook, and it's hard to beat people that, I mean, that's their living, that's their income, and, I mean, that's what they got to do to survive, and we're out there to have fun and win, so that's been a learning curve in its own for us, but we try to make the best of it, you know, having partnerships with different people that help support us, and it's been a every race, you think you, like I said, you think you got it figured out, and something changes, and you just got to be, you got to adapt with it, you got to got to live it.
You know, and actually last season we've seen a couple wins get away, you know, for, you know, flat tire, you know, and other things, you know, then this year, you know, you get started, you know, at the All-Star Showdown, you know, then finally, you know, you get the breakthrough, you know, which was at Roseville, you know, with the, you know, leading all the laps, you know, breaking the track record, you know, and finally getting, you know, that win, you know, that was just so, it seemed like it was just, it was so far, it was so close, but yet so far away.
Yeah, and that's like I'm saying, like last year, I mean, we've had, you know, my dad puts a lot of work into what we got, and he lives it just like I do. I mean, me and him, you know, see each other every day, and it's practically like we live with each other. Like, we go to work together, come home to the shop, we, you know, bust our butts, try to get everything we got, and we've had a lot of support from Campbell Motorsports and a lot of people, you know, involved with them that, you know, believed in me and trusted us to, you know, be together with them as an alliance, and, you know, they've helped us out tremendously, and my dad's been doing a great job with them, keeping our program the way it is, and, yeah, like last year, we had, you know, so many good runs. Stockton had, you know, ended up getting into somebody and spinning out, you know, chasing with Derek, trying to see if he gets to the front first. I feel like we lost one there, and then Roseville on top of that, flat tire with three to go. It's like I've been telling everybody, I've had a horrible luck my whole entire life, and it just feels like this black cloud's been chasing me. And ever since bringing up the baby thing, I feel like maybe this change in my life maybe moved that cloud a little bit because, you know, finally, you know, the week before I have my first kid, you know, I get my win. I finally feels like everything's going in the right direction. And I don't know. That's like I'm saying. It's just it's so much work, and people – try just as hard as you, and you just got to want it just as bad as them.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. And with that, Jacob, our, you know, the host, Sharon, I know she has some questions for you too. I'm going to turn it over to Sharon.
Yeah. Thanks for the 2 minutes, Sal. Okay. First of all, Jacob, I just want to let you know, I really appreciate, I looked up on Facebook, and your baby is adorable.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And it seems to me, I wanted to definitely talk to you about your win out at All-American Speedway. You led all the laps. You're second in points right now. From where I sit, two races in, you're kind of on top of the world here almost. You're almost right there in first.
It feels like it. It feels like it. I think we got a good shot at it. I try not to chase the points as much as I can. It's like I tell everybody, we go to the racetrack to win, and anything other than that, not an option. And just I try not to get into the points deal. I mean, obviously, you go to every race to do the best you can, and that's our goal. And Jeremy's going to be a little hard and tough this year. I mean, we're going to go to a couple more half-mile tracks here, and I feel like, you know, with – some things we've had going on lately, I feel like we're going to have a strong run on these half miles because our last run we had good. I mean, we qualified second or third this last year at Irwindale. We just didn't have good long run speed, and we figured out what was wrong, hopefully. So I think we got a good shot at it. My goal this year is to win every race for the rest of the year and see how it goes.
Well, you got another one coming up here with the Winter Showdown out at Kern County Raceway. So, we wish you the best of luck there. We barely got a chance to get to know you here tonight, Jacob, so we hope you'll come back and visit with us again. Before you go, though, any shout-outs you want to do to your team or sponsors, or if you want to let everybody know how they can follow you on social media?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook and Instagram. It's Jacob Gomes 16 on most of them. And, I just like to thank, you know, everybody that's involved to help me get to this point, Ron and Susan DeLoso, Phil and Trevi Andrietta, Sunny Valley Spoke Meats, Studio 10, RS Center. There's so many people, Dave Reeves, Mike David, Strange Oval Axles, Fury, Jeff Foltz. There's a lot of people that are involved in this thing that help me, get to the track every week. And I appreciate, everybody in my crew and all the dedication they do. They all work regular jobs and come to the shop three nights a week to spend time with us instead of their family. And it just means a lot to me. I have a lot of support from a lot of people, and I just appreciate all of them.
Absolutely. Well, we wish you the best of luck at Kern County Raceway. The next race is coming up here for the SRL. And come back and visit with us again, please. Maybe Sal will give
me
more time next
time.
Thank
you for having
me. Next time we'll give Sharon the whole segment.
Okay, Jacob. Take care now, and good luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Always our pleasure. All right, that is Jacob Gomes from the SRL Southwest Touring Series, a winner out at All-American Speedway, the second race into the season. And their next race is that winter showdown at Kern County Raceway. So you guys will definitely want to make sure you watch that race. Okay, we've got to get into the rest of our our Xfinity Series review. You want to cover the points report there, Sal?
Yeah. Actually, we got Noah Gregson leading the points, Ty Gibbs in second, A.J. Allmendinger third, Justin Allgaier fourth, Josh Berry fifth, Brandon Jonah rounds out the top six. Then at seventh, we have Daniel Hemric. Eighth is Austin Hill, which is the highest rookie so far this year. Ninth is Riley Herbst. 10th is Ryan Sieg, 11th is Landon Castle, and Sheldon Creed finally cracked the top 12. He's in 12th, and he's another rookie this year in the season.
Two rookies.
Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah, Noah Gregson having a banner year. Not that Atlanta wasn't one of his better tracks, but he still has that points lead. 19 points over both Ty Gibbs and A.J. Allmendinger. An amazing season for Noah Gregson.
Yeah, and let's not forget Ty Gibbs either with the two wins.
With the
Las
true.
Vegas win and the Atlanta win. You know, he didn't do so good at Daytona. But, I mean, this kid, Sharon, so young. And remember last year we talked a lot about him. You know, what he did in the Arca series, how he just dominated. He is incredible.
He's one of those blue moon drivers that come in and just take the racing world by storm. He wins in just about everything he gets into, or at least up in the top contenders. And it's been a lot of fun watching him race his way through the stepping stone of the Arca Menards series into the Truck series. And actually, he went to the Xfinity Series and now just doing phenomenal there, his first full-time season. So some really interesting names up in this top 10 for the Xfinity Series this year. Some you expected to see, like Noah Gregson, Ty Gibbs, and A.J. Allmendinger, Justin Allgaier. But there's some really... young guys that are kind of making their name now in the Xfinity Series.
Exactly. Ryan Sieg. Yeah,
Ryan Sieg, yes.
Yeah, and Landon Castle, he hasn't been around for a long time. I remember we had him, the last time we had him on, he was getting ready to go do a triathlon. Remember? He was going to do a triathlon.
Yes, I do remember. Yeah, he's very athletic. A lot of people don't realize how athletic he is. And we're going to have to see if we can't get him back on the show here at some point. Okay, I want to go ahead and move on to the Cup Series now, Sal. We talked about it earlier, William Byron getting that victory in the Cup Series. It was a lot of fun to watch. that happened. Age 24, driving the number 24 Liberty University Chevrolet with owner Rick Hendrick and crew chief Rudy Fugel. He won his third victory in 149 Cup Series starts, his first victory and second top 10 finish this year, and first victory and second top 10 finish in six races at Atlanta Motor Speedway. Ross Chastain, another guy having a phenomenal year, posted his first top 10 finish in five races at Atlanta Motor Speedway and his third top 10 finish of this season. Kurt Busch finished third, posting his 17th top 10 finish in 32 races at Atlanta. Harrison Burton was the highest finishing rookie in 25th place, and it was not a good day for Harrison Burton. But he was the highest finishing rookie of the race. So there was a little bit of light there. Okay, Daniel Suarez came home in fourth place. Corey LaJoie was fifth. The next five drivers were Chase Elliott, Chris Buescher, Martin Truex Jr., Joey Logano, and Alex Bowman. Your thoughts about the top 10 there?
Yeah, it was like you said, it was a really, really neat race. For a while there, let me see, Ross Chastain really made a good run, you know, at trying to win this race. And we don't talk about him much, but, you know, Bubba Wallace was right there. I thought he was going to get the win. And then, you know what, there was a few people on social media that said he's not used to running up there, so he didn't know what to do when he was put in that position and kind of blame himself. But, you know, kudos to Bubba. You know, he ran up there a lot. But William Byron, yeah. I mean, man, he's, you know, and if anybody knows the history behind William Byron, he didn't start racing until he was like, 17?
He was a teenager.
18?
Yeah.
Yeah, 19 years old. He was old. He was old when he started. And then to get the ride with a lot of people were questioned Rick Hendrick why he would pick up William Byron. But, you know, and his whole career he's been sponsored by Liberty University. But it was good to see him get the win. It was great to see Ross Chastain, you know, finish his second. You know, kind of would have liked to see him get the win and bust a watermelon. But, you know, second Kurt Busch, you know, and third, he hasn't been really having the season everybody expects him, you know, but, you know, a lot, it's good to see a mix of drivers in there, you know, Corey LaJoie, Daniel Suarez, you know, Chris Buescher, you know, you know, it's good to see the mix. I really like what this car is doing as far as, you know, trying to bring parity. Yeah, try to bring some parity. I mean, you can't bring all parity, but it's trying to bring some kind of parity, you know, to the series, you know, and I really like what I'm seeing out of this car. So far, it's been really, really racing.
It has been. The margin of victory was 0.145 seconds. William Byron won the first stage, and Ryan Blaney won the second stage. There were 11 caution flags for 65 laps. That's amazing. And 46 lead changes amongst 20 drivers.
Wow.
So that was a record breaker right there for lead changes and in this race, especially for a track like Atlanta Motor Speedway. That's amazing. Just kudos for the, you know, what happened with the racing out here at Atlanta Motor Speedway. I did see a few people complaining, but overall, I think it went over pretty big with everybody.
Oh yeah, you know, and especially this is they repaved. You know, this is the repaved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you know, and reconfigured. So you never know what you're going to get. You know, and because, I mean, we see what happened with Bristol when they went and redid Bristol, you know, we lost it. You know, Bristol got lost, you know, in the repay.
Yep.
But Atlanta, it really made it, I mean, it really made it a good race. You know, it's going to be exciting, you know, to see, you know, what happens, you know, the next, you know, their next one. And, but yep. I'll tell you, it's
Next, we need to go over the points report.
Okay, the points. We got Chase Elliott, who is still – Chase Elliott, yeah, who is still leading the points. Joey Logano in second. Chase Briscoe in third. William Byron in fourth. Kurt Busch fifth. Brian Blaney sixth. Eric Almirola seventh. Martin Truex eighth. That rounds out the top eight. And then from there, then we go down to ninth. This is Alex Bowman. 10th is Ross Chastain. 11th is Kyle Busch. 12th is Kyle Larson. 13th, Daniel Suarez. 14th, Kevin Harvick. Looks like he's going to make the chase this year. 15th, Tyler Reddick is having a really good season, too. And the top 16, Brad Keselowski cracks it after having the first two races. I thought Brad was going to be a Kevin Harvick and was not going to be in there, but Brad cracked the top 16.
He squeaked in there. He's just one point ahead of Austin Cindric, who's in 17th place. And some of these points get pretty tight. This is exciting to see all of these new names, like Chase Briscoe and up in that top 10. I love seeing Chase Briscoe up there. Last year, Stuart Haas Racing seemed to be down as a whole, but Chase Briscoe is kind of leading the brigade there at Stuart Haas Racing this season.
Yeah, and you know, Chase Briscoe was Tony Stewart's pick to take over the number 14 car when
Boyer.
Oh man, when Clint Boyer left and Tony Stewart already had Briscoe in the 14 car. Plus, you know, it's good to see Daniel Suarez up there in the mix and Tyler Reddick. You know, Tyler Reddick up there too. So, you know, we got a lot of young blood up there. Yeah. Ryan Blaney, of course, is always tough.
One of the things we've been talking about on Hot Topic with this new car, the Generation 7 car, is that it seems like the younger drivers are catching on to this new car a lot more quickly than some of the veterans. But I think as the season progresses, all these veterans are going to start catching up, and we're going to start seeing things shake up, I think, quite a bit in the second half of the season. What are your thoughts about that?
I kind of think so too, you know, and I think what's helping them out too, you know, if they get the one practice, you know, they get the qualifying, you know, then the race. So I think that one practice they're giving them, you know, is helping them, like we've been talking, you know, maybe by the end of the season or by next season, you know, I don't know if they're going to go back to the Friday practices, you know, like they have in the past, you know, Friday practice, Friday qualifying. Or if they're just going to keep this format, you know, keep Fridays for the truck series, you know, and then do everything on Saturday, with the Cup and Xfinity, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, towards the end of the season, when COVID is finally completely done and over with, you know, and what direction NASCAR is going to take. But I like this configuration. It was nice to go to Auto Club Speedway on Saturday and Sunday instead of going Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people are liking the two-day format versus the three-day format. And I think the drivers and the families kind of like that better as well. But we'll kind of see how that continues to play out. I like the qualifying better personally. I think it's more interesting to watch it than just doing the two laps around the track and done. I think it makes it a little more interesting, so I'm glad to see them kind of shaking that up a little bit, too. But, Sal, you're going to be at Irwindale Speedway this weekend for that ARCA West race and some other racing?
Yes. Oh, yes. I'll be there for ARCA. And hopefully I can try and get the race winner. It's kind of hard depending who wins the race. You know,
we haven't been in the winner's circle because we've been doing the short track racing this year. But let me look. We would have that 8:40 time frame available if you do get the race winner. So we'll make that work.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Like I said, you know, we'll see how we'll see how that if we can get that if I can get that race winner and you know, to come on Monday, because most of them are local anyways. Most of them are local. They're all local drivers. So, you know, it's not like they have, you know, like they have to travel on Monday or something like that.
Right. Well, we appreciate all that you do, Sal, and I hope you have fun out there at Irwindale this weekend, and we'll look forward to talking to you next Monday night here at 8:30 p.m. Our guest next Monday, by the way, we have Joe Graff Jr. at 9 o'clock, and David Coley. We were just talking about him, the crew chief for...
Oh, yeah, David Coley.
Yeah.
Spotter.
The crew chief for Jacob Gomes. Oh, no.
No,
yeah.
He's a spotter for Derek Thorne.
Oh, he's a spotter for Derek Thorne. Okay, so he's but he's working with Tanner this year.
Yeah, with Tanner Reif too. He spots for a lot of drivers. But his main driver is Derek Thorne.
Got it. Okay, well, we're gonna have to say this.
So I can send him a text. Yeah, I'll send him a text tonight to remind him.
Perfect. Perfect. And then this Thursday, we have Ryan Vargas on the show. So we're looking forward to talking to him on Thursday night. Okay.
Awesome.
So
ask him with that.
Yeah.
I'm going to go. You guys have a good evening. Have a good show. And we will talk
what
to you next
week. What do you want me to ask Ryan?
Oh, ask him if his mom ever found out anything about the mold. They had a flood during the week, and I called his mom about, you know, making sure that they check that she don't have no mold in her house.
Oh, okay. If she does, she knows who to call, right?
I told her. I talked to her. So anyways, all right. We'll see you guys. Good night.
Good night, Sal.
Good night.
All right. We are 2 minutes past the top of the hour, so we are biting at the bit here for Hot Topic Sound Off. And here to join me for that is our Fan for Racing crew. We will start with Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. Caught the tail end a little bit of what you guys were talking about, the configuration of qualifying in that. So I always appreciate getting Sal's input on it as well. I know he can't ever stay on for Hot Topics. Hopefully one day he gets a chance, because I like to hear his opinion and take on things too.
Oh, Sal always has an opinion. Okay. Also joining us tonight is Andy Lasky. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Thank you, Sharon. Happy to be on. I know it's been a week or so good to be on tonight.
Yes, indeed. And we also have joining us Tommy Kraft. Welcome to the show, Tommy.
Hey, how are y'all? Thanks for having me back.
Well, it's always a pleasure. We've got a full crew here tonight. Andy, I'm going to start with you for our first hot topic tonight.
Overall, the topic of Atlanta Motor Speedway, just the surface, the new type of racing that we saw, and just the weekend in general. I know it's a bit of a broad subject, but I think we can probably narrow it down to the new track surface and the racing product. I think that's probably the big hot topic coming out of the weekend. So really, really curious to see what everyone thinks. I know this is kind of one of those either you love it or hate it type things. So curious to see what everyone thinks about it.
Okay, Jay?
Well, you're right. You fall into one of those categories, and I think eventually we're going to hear drivers express that as well. We have four super speedway races where there is this pack racing, you know, the possibility of anybody can win. So I don't know. I'm not sure I understand why NASCAR felt the need to try and push another one specifically then at a mile and a half track. Now, I did hear some things about how they felt like the racing at Atlanta, the broadcasters on both TV and radio, as well as then Race Hub, of talking about that Atlanta needed something. But I think the repave would have done it itself. I don't know that they needed to necessarily push it to what we're going to call, I guess, a super speedway style of racing. In my opinion, I don't think Atlanta needed that. Like I said, we have four, Daytona twice, Talladega twice. The truck race and the Xfinity race, truthfully, I didn't even get to watch yet. I listened to it on the radio on my ride home. It's different when you're hearing it on the radio versus seeing it on TV. Having watched the Cup race, yeah, especially in the additionally narrowed Atlanta, to me then, though, you can't even get three. I know going four wide even at Daytona or Talladega is risky, but there's that option. You don't have that option. So if you have two wide racing, if you're third or fourth on the inside line, sixth position, you really can't go anywhere. So I'm not a huge fan of that. When it comes to Daytona and Talladega, you deal with it, and there is more room and capability to make those passes. The one thing I will say that I didn't particularly care for, and as I said, I listened to the Truck and Xfinity on the radio broadcast, then watched the Cup race, is I feel like they are really trying to jam it down our throats to make us like it. They got what they wanted or expected of the Super Speedway, but it felt like they were overly trying to make it such a positive before it had even happened that I just felt like it was being forced upon the listener. And now I know we've heard different drivers talk about Super Speedway racing. There's a lot of them that say it's a necessary evil. Big track, cool racing, you get some crashes and some new winners, but they don't like it. You know, they do it because it's their job and they have to, a couple times a year. Now it's up to six with Atlanta. So I just don't think that they necessarily had to try and force that. And I really feel like they did, especially from the broadcasters of how positive it was that, or great a thing that it was. Okay, it's Super Speedway racing. It's nothing new. It's on a mile and a half now, but I just felt like they were really trying to oversell it.
Tommy?
So, I really like Talladega and Daytona. So, Atlanta, I really enjoyed it yesterday. I like the double line racing because it was like that throughout most of the day until those last two stages towards the end where there was a few wrecks. So, they didn't run double two lines then. Or side-by-side the whole time. They kind of backed off and went single file. But either way, I really thought the Atlanta race was awesome. I mean, Ross Chastain was up there leading, Reddick, Stenhouse. I mean, it was a good race overall, I would say. I've seen both sides on Twitter all throughout the day today, and when I was watching the race yesterday, I saw some people talking about it on Twitter, but a lot of people didn't like it, but I feel like some people did, and I guess I'm one of those, but then again, like I said, I really enjoy the Daytona and Talladega races, so I'm happy with how the Atlanta race turned out. It was an exciting race. I mean, Chris Buescher finished backwards, so Corey LaJoie got a top five. The wrecks did seem to be kind of violent. They were some hard hits. I did notice that. So I'm sure they'll look into that. And, of course, the tire issue with the cars, with all three leaders at one point, Chastain, Reddick, and Stenhouse all wrecked leading with a flat back right tire. Did anybody see the Kyle Busch interview after the race? That was pretty funny. It was like three or four words and that was it. It was a yes, no, and that was it. And then he walked away. So, but yeah, I mean, I really feel like Reddick, Chastain, Suarez, Stenhouse, it gave them guys a chance to be up there and to possibly win. And I really think that we're going to see a bunch of different winners this season, just like we saw last season. So I'm fine with the Atlanta change.
Okay, that brings it to me. I'm a mixed bag on this one. I'm not a huge fan of Super Speedway racing to begin with. It's a wild card, and I guess that's part of the fun of having the Super Speedways is it's next to impossible to guess who could be the one that ends up in front when it's all said and done, because you can be in the back and still make your way up to the front. I think that when you compare it to the racing that we were seeing at Atlanta Motor Speedway. I looked at some of the finishes, and like in, I can't remember the dates now, if it was 21 or 22, but they were like 2 seconds gap from the first and second place winner in those races from a year and 2 years ago at Atlanta Motor Speedway. This year, everybody, all three series were under a second as far as the finish. They were very close finishes. So from that perspective, it was a lot better. When you look at the number of lead changes, what was it I just read a few minutes ago? 46, hold on, let me get the stats here. And this was just for the Cup Series. They were breaking records all over the place. 46 lead changes among 20 drivers. We don't see that at tracks very often with that many different drivers. You know, that many lead changes, number one, and that many different drivers. So it made it a lot more interesting than what we typically see at Atlanta Motor Speedway. And I guess from that perspective, it was a positive thing. But the wrecking and things being outside of their control, I have to agree with the drivers to a certain degree. They're doing it because they think that's what all the fans want to see on the track. And you know, there's a, I can argue either side of this, to be honest with you. But to me, I want to see the drivers more in control of what their destiny is. And I think we see that at different tracks. It's better than what it was as far as excitement and seeing different people in the lead and all the different things that happen throughout those races. It's more exciting when you look at the finishes with it being under a second in all three series. I think that's more exciting. You've got different drivers. You didn't have anybody who really dominated the stages and won at the end. You saw different people winning the stages and a different person winning at the end in some cases. So I don't know. I'm a little bit of a mixed bag on this one. I think it is better than the old Atlanta, but I'm just not that big of a fan of super speedway racing to begin with. At some, they did have to do the single file racing because it was difficult to pass and everything else. But we didn't see anything in this race that we don't see at the super speedways like Talladega and Daytona. The same things that we saw at those two racetracks are the same things that we saw at Atlanta. The difference is what Jay pointed out. It's so much more narrow, and I think that a lot of the drivers struggled with that. They don't have room to really make those passes, and that makes it that much more challenging. But then I always say to myself, that's why you get paid the big bucks, you know, to be challenged and to do things. They have two things that they're dealing with coming into Atlanta this weekend. They had the Gen 7 car, and they had the new track and pave and reconfiguration. So that's a lot for those drivers to have to deal with. I am willing to give it a chance and for these guys to get to know the track better. I'll be curious to see if there's any improvement when we come back the second time. I kind of doubt it. I think it's still going to be super speedway racing at a 1.5-mile track that's very, very narrow. And I think it's going to be really challenging for these guys. But I'm hoping that we do see more improvement as they get to know these cars better and they get to know that track better. So, Andy, I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
All right. So, obviously, I tried to go into this weekend with an open mind. It's a new racetrack with a super speedway package, and you don't really know quite what you're going to see. I watched everything there was to watch this weekend, all three practices, both races on Saturday live, and then the Cup race on Sunday live. You know, and obviously, for any of you that read the race day chats, you know, Mike and I talked about and debated it quite a bit. So on behalf of Mike Orzel, I think I share a lot of his thoughts on this. I struggle with it a bit, you know, from the standpoint of this was a manufactured racetrack to support super speedway racing. If we look at, and I should preface this by saying I enjoy the Daytona and Talladega racing, just like Tommy said. Like, I feel like it's necessary because those tracks are so big, we have to slow the vehicles down. And in doing so, it obviously packs everybody up and it becomes a chess match. You know, you have to be in the right lane with the right drafting partners, manufacturers working together. There's pit strategy. Handling comes into play at Daytona. You know, all that stuff is great. Like, I enjoy those four super speedway races per year. But I kind of get the feeling that it really shouldn't expand too much outside of that. Where I struggle with Atlanta, New Atlanta, if you will, is they specifically built this racetrack to cater to super speedway racing. So I struggle with it from the standpoint of it's a bit fabricated. Now, obviously, some people are going to disagree with that and say that NASCAR is in the entertainment business, you know, and it's all about people in the stands and eyes on TV. And I get that. And I get that it may be healthy for the sport from, you know, a rating standpoint and an attendance standpoint. So from the business side of things, I get why they did it, because if they had simply gone here if they had just simply repaved the track and left the banking alone, it probably would have been a pretty boring weekend, to be honest about it. You know, so I'm going to applaud them from the standpoint of coming in, adding banking, and creating a spectacle, if you will, that was entertaining. Was I entertained? You know, yeah, for the most part, I was. But, you know, at times I was just left to scratch my head, because a lot of race cars and trucks get torn up this weekend unnecessarily. And, you know, that's a pretty big burden on these teams, especially cup teams with limited chassis and cars at this point in time. So I just was left feeling like this maybe could have been prevented. But, you know, was it overall a good weekend for the Atlanta Motor Speedway and, you know, ticket sales and ratings? Yeah, it probably was. But I just felt like it was forced, you know, and I'm struggling to accept more super speedway style races. You know, I don't know that that's the answer. And I get concerned and a bit nervous about, because of the excitement in the racing that we saw this weekend, which was exciting. I mean, I'll admit I was on the edge of my seat, especially for the end of the cup race, because, you know, they kept tearing stuff up left and right, and you didn't know who was going to get caught up in it. You know, I was on the edge of my seat, which I guess means that it did its job. But, you know, I get concerned that because of that excitement generated from this, you know, will they start reconfiguring other mile and a half tracks to move in this direction? And, you know, we saw NASCAR try the high downforce experiment that failed. And I really don't want to see an influx of super speedway style racing. I like it, but I like it in moderation. And I think what makes NASCAR unique is the fact that, you know, we have those handful of super speedway races, you know, which they do a few times a year. But I also enjoy the fact that they've got road courses and short tracks and intermediate tracks. And quite honestly, you know, when you look at intermediate tracks like Homestead, Chicagoland, places like that, they put on really good shows in which the drivers had to, you know, the drivers had to really, you know, drive those cars and manage tire wear. You know, those tracks were just fine. And, you know, one of them doesn't even exist on the schedule anymore. We will see Homestead later in the season. But, you know, I wish that if we were going to keep intermediate tracks in the schedule, maybe, you know, trend in a Homestead type direction instead of this, you know, manufactured super speedway product. Like I said, I get why they did it. I think that it made for a much more entertaining weekend than we may have seen otherwise had they simply repaved it. But
I'm concerned that this is a trend we'll see NASCAR go in. And honestly, you know, the sport should not be defined by a bunch of super speedway races. I like them, but I like them only maybe three or four times a year, and that's about it. So I'm going to have to say that, you know, overall, I just wasn't sold on it, you know, and I would say hopefully that if this is the direction that Atlanta goes in, you know, for years to come, maybe at least until the surface wears a bit and they can maybe go unrestricted, you know, leave it at Atlanta. But I really don't want to see this expand out because I think that's not a good decision and not a good direction to go in.
Okay, Jay.
Yeah, and several things that I said to start with have kind of been echoed of it being forced, manufactured, I think is the word Andy used. Yeah, you watch take a football game or a baseball game, game-winning field goal, ninth inning home run. Yeah, we like to see that, but it's not going to happen every game, every race. So to try and force that is what I feel like is the direction they went. Plus the new car. I mean, the new car was supposed to take care of some of that anyway, with on a mile and a half of the not being able to pass. And I lost the word again, the deflector underneath was supposed to change the way they drafted and the ability to pass. So I don't think they needed to do also then the change to the track other than repave it, which, you know, we heard it last year. The driver said, don't repave it. Don't repave it until you absolutely have to. They got to that point. They had to repave the track, but let it work itself in naturally. You can do the tire dragons and stuff between races to get it to where it's a worn-out surface again, but to change it like they did, and I want to say it was Jeff Gordon. I might be wrong there, but someone during the TV broadcast referred to it as a baby Daytona. Well, why do you want a second Daytona? You know, I mean, that's the thing. Why do you like Daytona? Why do you like Talladega? Why do you like this track? Because it's unique. It's different. So why are you trying to make another one? You know, as Andy said, for your good. We enjoy them. But then we also enjoyed Atlanta, California, the new road courses, the Bristol on dirt, you know. And Sharon, you mentioned this of the last 2 years, the time differential in the margin of victory.
Finish.
I get that. But I think back to, and I'll use Sharon's driver, Martin Truex Jr., led how many, 390 out of 400 laps, you know, just dominated the Coca-Cola 600. That happens occasionally. Give them props. They did their job. They were prepared and ready. But that also then should be on the teams to step up and catch up, not on NASCAR to fix the track so that nobody can get away, because then what do you have? You have what happens here. Instead of a one-car wreck, you got a 20-car wreck. And there are some positives, like y'all mentioned. Seeing different drivers at the front, Corey LaJoie getting a top five finish, that is great. But did they get that finish, or did they get that finish because somebody else wrecked out and everything? And that's what you have at Daytona and Talladega. And that's great. Mm-hmm. You get excitement from it, but we don't want to see that every week either. So I'm still on the side of I just think they tried to overforce this.
Okay, Tommy?
Well, only to add that my pick won. I think I've been consistent this year, so I'm happy for that. William Byron, the 24 cars back in victory lane. The flames look good. I still like the rainbow car a little bit better and the original flames from Gordon. Bubba Wallace, I really thought he was going to win there for a second. I really thought it was going to be a last lap pass like the Xfinity and Truck Series. But Byron hung on, so happy for that. And I did watch some of the truck race and some of the Xfinity race. I didn't catch all of it, though. But from what I remember, pretty much kind of a wreck fest, like everybody's saying. And a last lap pass to win it for Ty Gibbs. So I wanted to pick him, but I think somebody took him this week, so couldn't get him. But we were talking about how it's now six super speedways if you consider Atlanta. Last year there was seven road courses, so I just feel like NASCAR is changing it up. They were talking about wanting to add another short track at Auto Club, but now I think hopefully they keep that the way it is. But either way, you know, they want to bring back Rockingham and North Wilkesboro, so they might add us, you know, another short track. So, but I enjoyed a super speedway racing, so I'm happy with the change calls. I really liked it. It was exciting. And I do have to say that I think the Cup race was better than the Xfinity and truck races, because once they did start wrecking a lot in the Cup series, they kind of stopped. In the Xfinity and the truck series, they don't really stop. They just continue wrecking. So, but it was good. The truck race and Xfinity race was last lap passes, and the Cup race was really entertaining. So I'm okay with the Atlanta change. You know, we probably won't see another Harvick finish or Carl Edwards finish like that, but then again, maybe we will. And, well, actually, I did want to add this, too. If there is one problem, I guess, with the new Atlanta Raceway, in my opinion, it's not big enough for them to go three wide. Then it would be a complete super speedway, in my opinion.
Yeah, I like Jamie McMurray's terminology for it, calling it the supermediate. Instead of the super speedway, it's a supermediate. I think, too, that we have to remember why they did this. NASCAR is in a era thinking out of the box of how they can make this more entertaining for the fans. So many fans complained about all the 1.5-mile cookie-cutter tracks, and they've been cutting them out. They've been trying to – they took Charlotte and turned it into a roval. They took Indiana, and they're using the road course at Indiana. And you're right, they've got a lot more road courses. I like the road course racing probably a little bit more than I do the super speedway racing. But I do think that NASCAR is trying to think out of the box on how they can make these races more entertaining for the fans. And because the fans have been complaint after complaint after complaint about the 1.5-mile cookie-cutter tracks. So in that respect, I got to give NASCAR some credit for thinking out of the box and coming up with an idea. But I have to agree that it's not something I want to see them go and do at all the 1.5-mile tracks. I think we've got enough of the super speedway races, in my opinion. And I got to do my announcement. Let me do that real quick. We're coming up at 10:30 p.m., and we are going to be going off the air at exact PM. And for all those that are tuning in maybe for the first time, we just want to let you know that even though we're going off the air at 10:30, we're going to continue our conversation past that time, and it'll be part of our podcast as part of our bonus overtime material. What I'll do is go out on Twitter and let you know that we're finished and that the podcast is available. And at that point, you can go to the podcast player that we have at fanforracing.com and just fast forward to the two-hour mark and to hear the rest of the conversation. So, again, we don't want anybody to be caught off guard and not know what to do or how to hear the rest of that conversation when we go off air kind of mid-sentence. But anyway, what I was going to say is I just think that NASCAR, I do give them kudos for thinking out of the box. I do think that they're trying to address what some of the fans' concerns are. And they said when they started some of this, they said sometimes we're going to hit it right and sometimes we're not. So this is one of those where you've got, you know, some fans really like it and enjoy the entertainment value that they get out of the races at this intermediate. Some fans don't like it, and that's going to be the case no matter what NASCAR does. I don't care what it is. There's always going to be somebody who's going to complain about what they did. So I do give them kudos for that, but I have to agree, let's not do it to all the 1.5-mile tracks now. Let's explore some other ideas on how to make those tracks a little bit more entertaining, other than trying to force the super speedway type racing on that tighter. It's so tight that they can't make it any wider than what it is on the 1.5-mile track. The 1.5-mile track is not really designed to be a super speedway. So I hope I'm with you guys. I hope they don't try to do this to a bunch of 1.5-mile tracks. I do give them kudos for trying to address fans' concerns, though. And I think we have to remember that. They are going to have some hits and they're going to have some misses. So, but, you know, let's stop at this one and move on to another idea as far as I'm concerned. Andy, your thoughts?
Yeah, that's really, I mean, I'm going to echo what you guys are all saying, you know, to close it out really is just, you know, since they have built the track the way that they have, I do think that you have to have, at least for now, you do have to have a super speedway type package there, because looking at some of the hits that these drivers took, if they went unrestricted and going even faster, you know, people would run the risk of being hurt, and we don't want to see that, obviously. So I do think that in light of the track design, you know, you do have to run that type of package there. But, you know, I agree. We're at 6 super speedway races now per year. And that's enough, you know, and because if you have too much of a good thing, it loses its luster. And I think that's what made the anticipation and the excitement for the Daytona and Talladega races so high, is you only saw 4 of those a year, you know, a couple in the spring, a couple in the fall or summer. And, you know, when those races came around, you know, they're a lot of fun because they're unique and you don't see too many of them. We've increased that number by 2. And I think that's where it needs to end. You know, like I said, I understand why they do it at Atlanta, but, you know, I definitely don't want this to get, you know, into too big of a thing. And hopefully this is where we see it stop. You know, I mean, I'm not sure of any other tracks coming up for being totally redone except for Auto Club. And I think in the case of Auto Club, you got to leave it alone or make it a short track. So, you know, like I said, I get what Atlanta did. I'm hoping that maybe as the track wears, they can get back to a more traditional intermediate style racetrack. But, you know, hopefully they just leave it where we're at. And, you know, we have 6 of those races a year and we call it good.
Okay. Jay, you get the next topic.
Well, in that discussion, it was already mentioned a couple of times, we had some tire issues. It appeared to be within one manufacturer, and it wasn't the tire issue, but how the car was either the camber on the car set up or leaning into the track. So what's the fix action? I know Mike posted something with that of that the Goodyear was looking at it and said, hey, it's not on us. But what's the fix action there, and was it really only one manufacturer?
Okay. Tommy?
Well, it seems to me that tire issues have been ongoing all throughout the season now, even at the Coliseum, I feel like, too. But it was Chastain first. He was leading when his back right blew in the lead. And then it was Tyler Reddick, who was in the lead in stage 2. Chastain was stage 1. And then it was Stenhouse either in stage 2 or stage 3 when his back right blew out. So all 3, and those are all Chevys, had those tire problems. And then Haley Deegan had a tire problem in a truck series, and in her truck, I don't know if it was her tire or her engine or what, but I mean, something caught fire on pit road. I saw that. So just appears that tire problems are an issue. I don't know if it's lug nut related or if it's just the tire, the new car. I'm not really into the mechanics part of the race, and I know some of it, but I'm more into the racing itself and that kind of stuff. But I do know that the leaders were all up front when it happened. And I feel like Jeff Gordon said something about it in the booth about maybe something in the back right tire was being heated by something, you know, up under the car in the engine, which was causing it. But like I said, I don't really know. But I just they'll eventually fix it out, and then there will be another problem later on this year. So the tires won't even be an issue later. It'll be another problem. So we'll see.
Andy?
Yeah, I think as we look at the problem specifically, it was related to Chevrolet, and it was related to, I think, Trackhouse and Trackhouse teams, RCR, and JTG Doherty cars that all had the issue. No Hendrick cars, to my knowledge, had a tire problem. It seemed like, you know, through some team chatter that it may have been a camber-related thing or maybe a toe-related thing. To Tommy's point, I don't understand the mechanics of it enough either to comment fully on it, but it seemed like it wasn't a tire failure per se as much as it may have been a tire wear issue due to the car setup. I chalk that up to, you know, growing pains. I say it every week, I think, this year about something because we're only on, you know, week 5 of the season. Not only is there a new car and a new tire, but it was also a new racetrack. And I think that some teams figured it out. Others, you know, maybe had some issues. And I would tend to expect that, you know, those teams that did have tire problems aren't going to have that problem when they come back in July because they're going to figure out exactly what the issue is. To Tommy's point, I think that, you know, when one issue is fixed, others will arise throughout the year, and you're going to see it. You know, that's just a product of everything being so new. And, you know, I'm sure they'll get things sorted out and ironed out moving forward. And, you know, we'll start to see less and less of these issues. But each week that we come to a new track or a new style of racing, whatever the case may be, there's going to be some issues. Thankfully, we didn't see more than those three tire failures, you know, and like I said, I think they'll get it sorted out down the road. But it to me was more of a, I think, a team and car setup issue than an actual tire problem.
Yeah, I'm going to kind of repeat myself too. And Jeff Gordon actually said it on the broadcast. He said teams are playing with the camber, the toe, and the air pressure. And some are being aggressive about it while others are being conservative with it. And what teams were conservative? The Hendrick Motorsports team with Jeff Gordon as vice chairman now there. So I really think that that's what they're going to find out, that it is, so, that some people were just over-aggressive with setting their toe and their camber. And I still say the air pressure and the variance that people are doing with the air pressure, they're going outside the recommended allowances, and I think that's got something to do with it. Now, that one time they took tire off, and I forget whose car it was now, but a bunch of gray stuff fell out of there, gray powdery stuff, so it was like the metal in there was being totally ground down, if you will, and came out as dust when they took that tire off. So that tells me that something was really grinding where it shouldn't have been grinding on that car. And I think that what they're going to end up with is saying these are the allowances that you have at these tracks. And you're right, it's a new track, a new car, and some people just hit it, some people didn't. They went too far with it. So I really think that's what they're going to find out here. I think Jeff Gordon said it very clearly on the broadcast, and I think he's 100% on the mark. Jay?
Well, I miss my buddy Mike, so I'm going to let him jump in here. As he put in the chat, referenced NASCAR looking into the tire failures. He said, good, definitely concerning. I'm sure they're going to try and blame teams for being overly aggressive on their setup, that the tires should be built to withstand anything that's legal in the rule book. Assuming that the camber settings the teams were running were legal per the rule book, it shouldn't have to put the tire in a regimen where it was prone to failure. Okay, so if their setup was legal per the rule book, then yeah, then it's on the tire itself. I don't 100% agree with that, but he's got a point. My point to that, though, is we talked about it. Atlanta, or first off, new car, new tire, new racing surface, new reconfiguration of that track. How do we know where the problem came from? And this goes to even the previous discussion. You're trying to fix the problem. Well, you throw 10 things at it. We still have problems, so what fixed it and what hurt it? You don't know. There's too many variables. If all they did was bring the new car to the old track, whatever problems is, obviously on the new car. Okay? So I don't know that we can pinpoint it because I think it's going to be a combination of things. As you mentioned, Jeff Gordon said they did go a little bit conservative to make sure they didn't have a problem. But we all know at some point, you know, no matter what it is, drivers, teams are going to try and push the limit. And here's where I disagree with Mike. Just because it's a legal setup don't mean you can't overextend or overpush the car, equipment, a driver, okay? You know, it's legal for a driver to zigzag back and forth. Does that mean he should do it? Probably not, okay? So there is a limit. You know, you can't just say, well, it's legal, it should work. No, that's not always the case. So I got to disagree and argue with Mike for a little bit there. I just think, like I said, there's too many variables to completely figure it out. The new tire that they have this year could have been a portion to it. The doing super speedway racing on a mile and a half comes into play. How the team set their car up, the camber in it, comes into play. So it was coincidental, and I know that on the TV broadcast anyway, talking about it being in the lead, again, that the amount of difference of downforce or whatever it is that's causing it obviously was playing a factor because it was when they got the car out front. So that too, what was the cause of that? And I do have to say, you guys said you weren't technical people, so you couldn't speak to it. I don't need to be a technical. I still speak to it, but there are some unknowns. it happened when they were at the front of the field. So, yeah, that question I can't answer as to why they were talking about it, though, of being the fresh air, clean air downforce, being the one out front pulling the entire field. Like I said, there's just so many variables. I don't think you can point to one thing and say, oh, it was that team because they did this with their camber. I don't think you can say, oh, it's the new tire, oh, it's the new car and the new track. I think it's just a whole pack combination package, which then Hendrick Motorsports, as Gordon said, the best thing they could do was go conservative and make sure that they didn't have that. And it paid off, as William Byron won.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Tommy?
I'm glad to see that they're looking into the tire. Because, it, like we all said, it's been five races, and there's been tire problems throughout all five races. So glad to see they're looking into it. And I do feel like I remember Clint Bowyer saying something in the booth, too, about the air pressure in the tires also. But I do remember Gordon saying, like, he did an explanation of to what he thought was happening, so I did remember that. But just glad to see that they're looking into it and maybe – you know, like I said, it'll be resolved, and then there'll be another problem that we'll be talking about later on. So, but, maybe it was just coincidental that it was three Chevys, and they were leading. Either way, it made it more entertaining for sure when all three of them had flats. And Chastain battled back and had a top 10 finish, I think.
Yeah.
So, pretty good race.
Hey, Andy? Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, just to close this one out for me, just, you know, I think that, you know, I would suspect that teams will spend some time digging into why the tire failures happened. And, you know, I can see Mike's point of, you know, the tire needing to be durable enough to withstand anything within the rule book. I think that's a good point. You know, you just have to wonder if teams are right on the edge of, you know, setups being legal versus not legal, if that's what the difference maker is. But I get where he's coming from on that. So, you know, maybe the tires do need to be a little bit more durable in the standpoint of being able to withstand tolerances and differences, you know, being different across the field. But, you know, I do think that, you know, teams are also pushing the envelope right now and trying to see just how far they can go on setups, just how far they can go on air pressures and all kinds of things, not just even tire related, but just, you know, setup related, you know, trying to push the rules and trying to push everything they can to figure out how to make speed out of this race car. When you look at the number of inspection failures we continue to see week in and week out, I know that's a different mm-hmm. topic, but I think that just proves the point that everyone's pushing right now to get speed, especially teams that maybe are struggling to start the year. So, you know, but I think that with every week that we come to the track, we're going to see a lot of learning take place. And like I said, I'm sure that whatever was the cause this weekend, it'll get figured out. It'll get ironed out. It won't be a repeated process when they come back in July.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. This is a bigger tire. But I, I'm not sure if it's the tire that's the problem. I know that they were looking at the treads. Even Tony was out there looking at the, reviewing all the different tires that were coming off the cars. The one that really concerned me the most is when I saw that metal that had turned to dust that was coming off of that car. That I think is definitely a setup problem where there that was absolutely destroying the metal in there. I don't know if it was a tie rod or axle or what it was, but it definitely was destroying the metal inside that car. So to me, that somebody went too far on that one for sure. but yeah, NASCAR is going to review it. Goodyear's looking at it. Each of these teams are going to look at what they did. And they've got notes now for Atlanta. Going into Atlanta, nobody had notes because of all the unknowns that they were dealing with there. So at least they'll get some notes for the next time they race at Atlanta on what's going to be acceptable and what's not going to be acceptable. And we'll just see what comes out of the Goodyear review and if any of the teams come up with the issue was for their respective teams. Jay, you get to close it out.
Well, you mentioned it there. One specifically, you're right, that you would have to think it was something the team doing. And I don't know which one of the Stuart Haas cars it was that was having that issue, but that obviously was something within that car, within the setup or whatever. The rest of them, you can kind of maybe group into one. And I like the fact that Goodyear's involved in looking at it, but you're right. It wasn't the tire itself that failed. So mm-hmm. them being involved in it helps, and maybe they can help the teams understand. And this goes back to what Mike said. You can't just say, well, it's legal to do this. It should work. Because, I mean, that's just not – I disagree from the full aspect of that. Yeah, like I said, I mean, there's a lot of legal things you could do that probably aren't going to work. So these teams are going to have to adapt, and that's why, Sharon, you like to say it, these are the best of the best. They get paid the big dollars. They're going to have to adapt. If you can't push that hard, you know, going back to Daytona, Justin Haley said his tire might have blown because of the way he was shifting, the way he was leaning on it mm-hmm. or whatever, then they're going to have to adapt and work with it. But Goodyear's at least still working with them and saying, hey, maybe there is something we can do with the tire that will help you guys do what you want to do and still be able to use the said tire or, you know, adjust the tire as well as the new car, new track. So we'll have to see as it goes throughout the year. I know we've said there's been tires issues all year, but it's been a little bit different, and that goes with the territory, you know, because each track is different. Each mm-hmm. weather conditions are different. You know, had it been a cooler day in Atlanta, would that have been different? Or I guess I should say warmer day because it was pretty cool there after all the rain they got. You know, is it going to be different in July because it's going to be a hot and steamy track? We don't know. But that's where I feel
another
like
thing that
like
could have been a factor. are all those bumps. There were a lot of bumps on that track. Sorry.
And that's, there you go. That plays into track surface. You know, we're saying this happened at California, this happened at Phoenix. You can't say that's the same because there are just, again, so many variables. So teams like HMS, they said, okay, we're going to make sure we don't have that issue, go conservative. Okay, we gave up a little speed or handling, whatever. They won the race, though, so.
Okay. Well, you know, we have a lot to talk about here tonight. Only two subjects that we were able to get to tonight. Tommy, do you have a quick one we can cover, or because we've only got less than 10 minutes now?
Well, since we were talking about the tire failure and stuff, I guess we could go with the Haley Deegan fire. Did y'all see that and how she had to go to the Enfield Care Center for smoke inhalation?
Yeah. Okay, so Andy, you get the first one here.
Yeah, kind of a scary situation here that you don't see too often. She did sustain some damage to the left rear as a result of an on-track incident, and a fire started in the left rear wheel assembly. She was in the truck on pit road when it caught fire, and there was a lot of smoke in the driver's compartment, and she suffered smoke inhalation. So obviously an unfortunate scenario there. I don't know how you prevent something like that from happening. Certainly there's a lot of fire suppression equipment on these vehicles that we've seen really help in the case of an engine catching fire, whether it be oil, fuel, or something else that's related to that. But, you know, given that it is a vehicle with moving parts and pieces, petroleum products, hot engines, hot brakes, you're never going to eliminate the potential for a fire. So you just have to hope that, you know, things like that don't happen. But certainly a really scary scenario to be in the vehicle and you know, suffer smoke inhalation. That could have been, you know, bad enough to send her to the hospital. It was, you know, certainly bad enough that she went to the Enfield Care Center. So definitely a scary situation. Glad she's okay, and it looks like she'll be back at it this weekend at COTA. But certainly not something you like to see, that's for sure.
Okay. Jay?
Well, I say this one, I hadn't got to watch the TV coverage yet. It's still on my recorder. Listening to it on the radio, it's no different than anything else. I know Mike was saying how they didn't cover it or talk about it on TV and took it in a different direction. I'm not as concerned about that as the fact of, like you mentioned, of maybe there is an issue there that needs to be looked at from a safety aspect, which I'm okay with now. As the details come out, then the reports start coming out. So just because TV didn't talk about it when it happened, you know, as you're getting more information and it's coming out, that's most important, because then everybody can look at it and go, okay, is there a problem with the structure? Is there a problem with this? And go from there. Obviously a very unfortunate situation from her. And honestly, she's probably happy it didn't get a whole lot of TV coverage, because that's not the kind of coverage you want to get. So I think they did make mention on the broadcast she was in the accident and gone to the Enfield Care Center and had been released from there. They always give that report because that's what they know at that point. You know, I don't know what point they decided she was going to go to the hospital and that it was smoke inhalation issues. But I think broadcasters bring what information they have at the appropriate time. They don't want to speculate or cause a commotion about something that was nothing. So I think they do a fine job with that overall. I know we had the one missed thing with Spencer Boyd a couple weeks ago. Mike referenced that as well. And NASCAR already owned that one, okay? They said they won't let it happen again. Let it go.
Yeah, Mike says that they didn't cover it on TV at all, other than the fact that she was treated and released. And I don't think that's necessarily true. I remember seeing them take that tire off and all of the fire that came off with that tire and everything on pit road. They did mention that she did not want to speak to the media after she had been to the Infield Care Center because of the smoke inhalation. So you knew something had happened with her that caused her to really experience some issues with that. But you're right. I don't think she would have wanted a lot of TV coverage on that. With her and everything that was going to happen there. But I do think that there is something that they need to look at to kind of help prevent that kind of smoke inhalation. And I don't know, not knowing exactly what caused it, what the answer is going to be. But I hope somebody is looking at that to see if there is a way that could be prevented in the future for the drivers. It's a scary situation, not something that anyone wants to experience, I'm sure. Tommy?
So from what I saw today on Twitter, and I think it was on Twitter, she actually had radioed in and said that, you know, something didn't smell right in the car, and then she brought it down the pit road, and then that was actually when it caught fire, and that's when she suffered the smoke when it was sitting there on fire and they were trying to fix it. Glad she's okay and that she'll be able to race next week. I feel like Austin Dillon had a problem last year at Martinsville or something like that, so it does happen every now and then when the cars do catch on fire, so it's unfortunate, but glad she's okay. And when I think Andy said what it was, I didn't know what it was either. I didn't realize that's what it was. I just know that she said that something didn't smell right and brought it in, and then it caught on fire. So, but glad she's okay.
Okay, we're going to let that be it for the hot topics tonight. We're not going to do the second round on that particular topic, but we will go around the horn here to do our roundtable sign-off. So, Andy, you want to start?
For me, I'm on Twitter at CB14Fan, and, as always, good to be on tonight, and planning to be back Thursday, and always good to be on, so looking forward to later this weekend for this upcoming race weekend.
You can follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, Mopar MJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. You can see I had a great weekend over northeast of Atlanta. I didn't make it to the NASCAR races, but the Ultimate Street Stock Challenge Series got some great interviews in and coverage of that, so check that out. And I'm with Andy. Can't wait till Thursday night. Sharon mentioned we got Ryan Vargas coming on, and there's still a good couple of good hot topics we didn't even have the opportunity to get to tonight.
I know. It's amazing. Tommy?
Tommy_C24 on Twitter. Haven't tweeted anything in a while, but I will eventually. Not working on anything, but I will get to work on something. But thanks for having me on the show. I always enjoy being on here, and I really appreciate it.
Okay. Well, I appreciate all of you guys and all that you do. We always have great conversations. I am Fan for Racing Site on Twitter and Fan for Racing Blog and Radio everywhere else, including fanforracing.com, which, by the way, is finally back up and running. Hopefully we won't have to run into that issue anymore at GoDaddy. So we had earlier tonight, we had Tanner Reif on. He's with Sunrise Ford in the ARCA West Series. He gave us a great interview. And Jacob Gomes, who's races with the SRL Southwest Touring Series, won at All-American Speedway, second in the series point standings there. He was on and just had the most adorable little baby. If you want to look up the picture on Facebook, she's just really cute, which is why he wasn't on the show last week. They had a fun Monday, and he was at the hospital, but she was born on the 16th. So if you want to hear those interviews, they'll be there. Monday, well, first of all, Jay mentioned we've got Ryan Vargas from JD Motorsports coming on board this Thursday night. Monday night, next Monday night, we'll have Joe Graff Jr. back, and Dave Coley, who's the crew chief for Derek Thorne, and I believe he also was working with our guest, Tanner Wright. So looking forward to talking with David Coley as well next Monday night with Joe Graff. So that's a big shout-out, I guess, to our listeners for tuning in. We appreciate all of you. And with that, guys, I think we're ready to say good night.
Have a good night, guys.
Good. See you Thursday.
Okay, good night, everybody.